Andrea, welcome to Girl Take the Lead. We are so excited to have you with us and to hear about this book that you've just launched and your nonprofit. You got a lot going on, girl. We are so happy to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome. So maybe it'd be good for if we'll start with you introducing yourself to the listeners and give them like an overview of the book you just launched, as well as your nonprofit. That would be great.
Okay. Well, my name is Andrea Wilson Woods. I'm a keynote speaker, a writer who loves to tell stories, and a patient advocate who founded Blue Fairy, the Adrienne Wilson Liver Cancer Association. The first book I wrote was Better Off Bald, A Life in 147 Days. It's a medical memoir about raising and losing my younger sister, Adrienne, to liver cancer. When I was 22 years old, I got custody of Adrienne, and she was 8 at the time. We have the same mother, but different fathers. Unfortunately, her father died before she was born, and our mother decided she didn't want to be a mother anymore. So I ended up going to court and suing our mother for legal custody and won. And I raised Adrienne all through my 20s until she was diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer 1 month after her 15th birthday. And that book is written like a journal because I kept a medical diary while Adrienne was sick, and she also kept a journal. So, for example, day one is chapter one. And by day three, I introduced little snippets from her journal. So you can see her point of view as the patient, which often differed from my point of view as her parent and caregiver. The book that I just launched is I'd Rather Be Dead Than Deaf: A Young Woman's Journey with Liver Cancer. It's entirely Adrienne's story. I served as the editor for the book. It's a compilation of her journals, which began 1 year before her diagnosis and continued until 1 month before she died. The book also contains poetry and her artwork. She studied art for 2 years, and her artwork has been displayed in several Los Angeles galleries. And all the proceeds from that book go directly toward Blue Fairy, the nonprofit I founded in memory of Adrienne. And I wrote my book because I wanted to share our story as sisters going through difficult times, even before cancer. And my favorite reviews are the ones that say it's a love story, because it really is. And I'm getting choked up early. I've never loved anyone the way I love Adrienne, still deeply and so unconditionally. And I edited and published Adrienne's book because there isn't a single book about liver cancer written from the patient's point of view, much less a young woman's point of view. And she is just so vulnerable and raw and honest.
Yeah,
And plus, her artwork is incredible.
it is. When I was going through the book, and for any mother out there, you're gonna take a look at this book and relate to it. So, and especially if you have teenagers, or gone through those teenage years, but the art and just you get her coming through the pages and I think I know I was moved to tears, and we can start this episode super early with the tears, because I could see my daughters in it. I think every mom will take a look and see any child that goes through what she went through, and you want her to miraculously live, but you're making her live in this book. So I just want to thank you for doing it. And I know that it probably there were times when you just probably cried through it when the process of it. But I think, for the last 8 years of my career, I was working in the health system, and it was such an honor to work with the cancer unit and the brave men and women who do that work. And you want to have somebody hold their hand through the process, someone who understands it, and you bring that voice forward for them.
Thank you.
Yeah. And
Thank
usually
you.
at the end of the episode, I say, how can we support you? But I think all of us should get these books and put them into the libraries at our hospitals that we go to or that we know about, put them on the tables so that others, you know, that patients can see and hear from somebody else having gone through it.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I was very proud. My book was published over 4 years ago, and I was very proud when it went into the Mayo Clinic patient library. That was one of my goals, was to get it in there.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to do that for you to get them into John Muir Health. Tell us a little bit about the foundation, because unfortunately, if you're just listening to audio, you can't see her background. It's so cool. The blue fairy is there, and it's just so great. But yeah, talk a little bit about the foundation.
Yeah, of course. About a year after Adrian died, I was deeply suicidal. I was 30 years old. I really didn't see the point in living anymore without her. And I had to find a way to channel my grief. And my goal was to volunteer for the largest liver disease organization in the US, but they turned me down. And they wanted nothing to do with liver cancer at that time. And I researched and I discovered there wasn't a single nonprofit in the US doing anything with primary liver cancer. And I knew from my experience with Adrian that it was only going to continue to get worse in the US and worldwide. And there's this great quote that's credited to Lily Tomlin, where she said, "I thought somebody should do something about that. And then I realized that somebody was me." And that's exactly what happened. It was like, I realized, I was like, oh, I have to get this done. Like, nobody was doing it. And unfortunately, I was right about liver cancer. It's one of the few cancers that continues to rise each year. And it's the third leading cause of cancer deaths worldwide.
And Adrian was only 15, 14?
15, one month after her 15th birthday. Yep.
So young.
Yes.
I mean, when I think about liver, I think about older people that have maybe abused their, you know, drinking.
That's what everybody thinks. Yeah. And I kid you not that this really happened multiple times, to the point where Adrian and I just started laughing about it. Her friend's parents were about 10 years older than I was. I was 28 when she was diagnosed. I actually turned 29 in the hospital with her during her fourth round of chemotherapy. But more than one person of these, her friend's parents, said to my face, "Oh my God, I didn't know she was a drinker. She's a straight A student." And it was like, wait, how much would a 15-year-old have to drink? But before she was diagnosed, that's all I knew about liver cancer. That's all most people know. And yet, the most common causes of primary liver cancer, yes, alcoholism, abusing alcohol can do that. But the most common causes are actually viral hepatitis, specifically hepatitis B and hepatitis C. Mm-hmm. Hepatitis B is more common in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia, and hepatitis C is more common in the US and other Western countries. Mm-hmm. And when the doctors saw what they did in her biopsy, they were so stunned. They said, "We're testing her for hepatitis." And at the time, I didn't know what that meant. I was like, okay. I knew of hepatitis A because there had been an outbreak in her school district 1 year, but that is contamination with food and water. Well, they came back and they told me she had chronic hepatitis B and hepatitis C, and we never knew it. Mm. And given when she was born, that our mother was an addict and a nurse, they concluded that she contracted hep B and C from our mother during childbirth. Mm. And when Adrian was born in 1986, testing mothers, prenatal testing for hepatitis B was not standard of care. And hepatitis C had not even been identified or named yet, much less taken out of the blood supply. Mm-hmm. And they are called the silent killer because typically you don't know, you know, you have it until you start developing symptoms. And ultimately, it doesn't always, but it can lead to liver cancer. So on the surface, she was as far from the typical patient, especially over 20 years ago, as you could get. On paper, it literally said non-North American male over the age of 50. And here is a 15-year-old Caucasian female who had never been outside the continental U.S., but she actually had very common causes of primary liver cancer.
There are a couple of points in the book, too, where she was in so much pain and her stomach was extended. And, you know, I was, you know, you just want to hug her and help her through that. And I don't know. I mean, it just tears my heart to think about.
Yeah.
But I mean, then
the
I
day
think,
she felt pain, though, is that was the day that we found out she had tumors in her liver and lungs.
Right.
The day before, she wasn't in pain. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes the fairies come into our life and to, you know, share with us some journey. And, you know, I kind of look at things that way. And she was certainly one of those. And the way that she spoke, she was so insightful and irreverent at the same time. And just
so funny. So funny. She could always make me laugh. Always.
And her drawings were just from the heart. So one thing I found very interesting in the book was that early on she says, "I'm not a leader."
Yeah, I know.
And I had to just stop for a moment and go, "Girl, you are so a leader. How can you not think
100%? I know.
Leading and helping people right
now.
Oh
yeah, organizing her friends to go to the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Oh yes, like I don't think she wanted the responsibility of being a leader. She knew why I was a leader, and she saw how I was constantly stressed out. I was managing multiple jobs, my acting career, parenthood, and she was a natural leader, but she liked to pretend she wasn't.
Yeah, she was. She definitely was. And she continues to lead us. So we're very grateful to you for doing that. So some of the, when we spoke before about planning this episode, one of the things that I think you cover in your book is the process of grief that you went through, and that I think parents of children who are going through these kinds of very difficult things might be going through as well. And you want to talk a little bit about that? Emotions are definitely things that I know our listeners are interested in. And, you know, I remember when I had a strong emotion once, and I said to my husband, how do you live with this? And he said, "They pass. Hold on. They pass."
Yeah.
And I thought that was just so wise in some regard. But what was your process like?
Well, I'm still grieving, right? The emotions ebb and flow depending on the day or the week or the month. Adrian's birthday is in a couple of weeks, and that's always a tough day. And I mean, some days are so bad, I want the earth to just swallow me up so I never have to miss her again. And other days, I'll be remembering something she said to me. And as you've already talked about, she just had this dry, sarcastic wit, and I'll just laugh out loud. And so I think it's a real process. I think it's important for people to understand that people grieve differently. And for example, I have experienced depression, certainly when she was diagnosed, bargaining, I guess on some level, acceptance. And while she was sick, a very healthy state of denial. I had to live in that healthy state of denial, not that she was sick, but that she wasn't going to die from this. And that was the only way I could get through it day to day. But I didn't feel angry. And because I didn't know who to be angry with, I really struggle with that. And I talk about that in my book. And it was 17 years after she died. And I was watching this stupid show on Netflix on my computer, of all things. I mean, it wasn't even on TV. I didn't have a TV at the time. And they showed this, the show got canceled the last minute. So they had to wrap all these storylines up all of a sudden. And so they showed the lead character's daughter graduating from high school and then college. And Adrienne had wanted to go to college since she was 6 years old. I mean, she had that part of her life completely mapped out. And I got so angry. I think it's the angriest I've ever been in my life. I was just full of fury. I just, for a solid 5 minutes, I was so mad. And I still don't know who I was mad at, but I was so mad that she never got to graduate from high school and so mad that she never got to graduate from college. Things that other people just take for granted. Mm-hmm. And so I think grief is it's a very fluid thing.
Yeah. Well, most of us think of grief as something sequential, like it's organized. Yes. And
it's not.
Start with acceptance and then go into.
Oh, yeah. No, no.
But the 17-year gap kind of does help us see that it can catch up with us at times we didn't even know. Maybe it's like when we're able to handle it more. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows? I don't know. Yeah, everybody's different.
Yeah. Well, in leading your nonprofit, what are some lessons that you've learned from doing this and, you know, taking on that charge to do it?
I think the first lesson is don't start a business with your friends. And I say that because I had a very close-knit group of friends. They weren't all friends with each other, but they were friends with me. And they all acted like aunts and uncles for Adrienne. And they were there for most of her cancer journey. Some of them kind of fell off toward the end, but they were there. And none of them had had children of their own yet. And when I decided to start Blue Fairy, a lot of them came on board. And so we started with this very large board of directors, too large for a new organization. And I think some of them, no, I don't think this, I know because I found out, they thought it was just sort of group therapy for me once a month. Like it was like, why did you think this was group therapy? We signed legal documents to found a company in California, you know, I mean, and when they saw that I was going in this direction and I was leaving my old life behind, I quit acting and, you know, I was leaving my old life behind and going in this new direction. They really struggled with it. And then this group of people that always came together for me and for Adrienne and for my partner at the time and his son for holidays and birthdays, they always managed to get along just fine. But when it came down to an actual business, there was so much infighting. Mm. And I lost almost all of those friends, eventually lost all of them, but some of them I lost because of the business. And so we only have one person who's still from that founding board. And she was the only person that I actually didn't know. Someone else brought her in because she had the experience we needed as a treasurer. And she and I are now friends and have been for a long time. And so I think you can become friends with someone that you go into business with, but I don't recommend necessarily starting a business with your friends or just proceed with caution, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of great stories that would say just the opposite of that. I'd say also focus on one thing until you experience success. We really focused on patient education first because it was such a missing gap.
Yeah.
And I think we did that part really well, but I can go back and see those first 5 years and see how we were trying to do other things and doing too much at one time with almost no resources whatsoever. And we were spreading ourselves too thin. And then now I would say the last thing is really diversify your funding, which is true for any business, not just a nonprofit, but you can't just have one type of funding. You know, when you think about Amazon, you know, they don't make money on their retail business. They have other types of funding, right? Other avenues of revenue. And the same is for a nonprofit. You really have to have multiple buckets of revenue to have a sustainable business.
So when you say multiple buckets, it's more like fundraising from different sources. Is that kind of?
Yeah. So for a nonprofit, it would be, you know, having donations from individuals, mm-hmm. having corporate gifts, having memberships, maybe you have events, mm-hmm. government, if that plays in for your nonprofit. It's not really applicable for us yet, but really diversify your funding.
Okay. And what would you say is your mission now?
Our mission hasn't changed. Blue okay. Fairy's mission is to prevent, treat, and cure primary liver cancer through research, education, advocacy. So we focus on hepatocellular carcinoma. That's the scientific name for it, or HCC for short. And I want to see a cure for it in my lifetime. And I keep telling the scientists, like, I'm not getting any younger, guys. Like, speed it up. Come on, let's go. I really want to see a cure for it in my lifetime. I mean, when we started it, our thought process was, let's get to the point where we put ourselves out of business because our services are no longer needed. Let's get to that point. And there's certainly been a tremendous amount of progress in the last 5 years. And that's helped Blue Fairy grow tremendously as well. But there's still no cure for advanced disease. And most people aren't diagnosed until it's advanced. Our livers don't have pain receptors. And that's why you don't feel pain. So if you don't know that you have underlying liver disease, you have no way of knowing you're at risk for liver cancer.
Right.
And there's still so many people I meet that knew they had underlying liver disease, and yet they had a totally incompetent doctor that did not tell them their risk for cancer and that they needed to be screened on an annual basis.
Right. So when you get your donations in, are you giving those donations to research facilities or projects, grants, those kinds of things?
Yeah, so we have a lot of programs, and all of our programs are free for patients and families. And then we do have one research award that we give out every year on my sister's birthday. So we'll be announcing that in a couple of weeks.
Cool. What about the different, and what would you say, because your story covers different generations. I mean, we're talking about Adrienne's being, you know, Gen Z and young and alive.
She's a millennial, or she would have been a millennial, but yeah.
Okay. But what would you say to these younger women about what they should they get asked these questions when they go in for their to visit their doctor? Should they, what kinds of things would you advise?
Well, everyone should get a hepatitis C and hepatitis B test, everybody. And most schools and most states actually mandate. So hepatitis, they're different types of diseases, even though they're both viral and in the liver. So hepatitis B has a vaccination. Hepatitis C has curative drugs now on the market. So the CDC actually mandated over 10 years ago that all baby boomers get a one-time hepatitis C test, mm-hmm. Because they knew that about a third of baby boomers had hepatitis C and didn't know it.
Right.
And when the curative drugs were coming to the market, they wanted people to be aware of it. And these are simple blood tests. These are not difficult. So you just need to ask for them. But it's not something most primary care physicians are just going to do. With hepatitis B, like I said, it's a vaccine. Mm-hmm. Most states mandate the hepatitis B vaccine as part of a childhood vaccine series. Sometimes it's elementary school. Sometimes it's middle school. Unfortunately, I live in the only state in the country. I now live in Alabama after living in LA my whole adult life. And this is where Adrienne was born. It's the only state in the country that does not mandate a hepatitis B vaccination. Let me say that one more time. It's the only state in the country that does not mandate a hepatitis B vaccination at any age. So my goddaughter, who's in her late 20s, has never gotten that vaccine. Hepatitis B is, in some ways, I don't want to use the word more contagious, but it's spread through bodily fluids, whereas hepatitis C is through blood. And for example, when Adrienne was diagnosed, the doctors told me immediately, you've been raising her for half her life. You need to get tested immediately. And you have the same mother. You have to get tested. And of course, I didn't even bother to do that until after she died. But I did. And I don't have hepatitis C, but I did have hepatitis B. And for most people, if you have hepatitis B and you have a healthy immune system, you may not even know you have it and you pass right through it. But for some people, it can become chronic, or if you get it the way Adrian did as an infant, it's chronic.
Yeah.
So, I have hepat I've been exposed to hepatitis B. I have natural antibodies. I don't need the vaccine. But when I tried to donate blood during the height of COVID, they specifically asked for my blood type, which is a little bit rare. I totally forgot about the whole hepatitis B thing. And I got this 5-page letter from the American Red Cross saying, "You have been exposed to hepatitis B and you cannot donate blood and you need to talk to your physician." I was like, "Oh, that's right. I can't. That's right. I can't donate blood. My blood is rejected." So, but I'm very fortunate. So, how I got exposed to hepatitis B could have been just taking care of Adrian. It could have been through our mother. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I think it's great advice, though, for you, for all of us that you've passed along, how to become more aware and, even help other family members, friends, or whatever, make sure that
Yeah.
everybody's getting tested and getting the vaccines. So you were taking care of her so young, but what would you tell your 20-something self now?
Oh, that's easy. I would tell myself to get Adrian tested for hepatitis B and hepatitis C.
Course.
Because, it's interesting. So we knew that thyroid disease runs in our mother's side of the family, and thyroid disease is it's like 9 to 1 more common in women than men. And so I always pushed her pediatrician to test her for thyroid disease. And I always had to push really hard. And he was like, "She's, 10, 11, 12." I'm like, "I don't care, And but had I known, she would have gotten tested. She would have come back positive. We would have started screening her for liver cancer. And at that young of an age, because she had an otherwise quite healthy liver and healthy immune system, she would have been eligible for a liver transplant that could have saved her life. But we didn't know. So that's an easy question. In fact, my superpower, sometimes I ask you, my superpower is I wish I could time travel and go back in time and go back to that time when I first got custody of her and get her tested right then and there.
But your message to us about getting tested is you're getting it out and spreading it to so many people. So,
Yeah, you just have to ask, but it is not part of a normal
right.
annual exam. Or I don't want to say annual exam that makes people think of their pap smear or women think of their pap smear. It's not part of an annual physical. So,
Exactly. So I think we've covered everything, but is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners about Adrian or about the foundation or?
well, I know in our pre-show call, you asked about wisdom to pass down to different generations. And I would love to share the best two pieces of advice I've ever gotten. And I didn't understand them at the time when I got them, but I do now. And the first one, a college professor told me this when I was 19 or 20, and I didn't get it. And she said, "Don't confuse who you are with what you do." And I think that's such wise advice because I'm very driven. But if your identity is tied to your career, you will lose yourself because at some point you're going to fail. So at some point, there's going to be a setback. And running Blue Fairy is what I do, but it's not who I am. I'm a sister, I'm a daughter, a lover, a friend, a storyteller, and an advocate. And those things are different. And I think that's really important for young people to understand. And the other piece of advice I got actually when I was in my early 40s, and I still, again, I was like, "What? That doesn't make sense." But and now I totally get it, is treat people the way they want to be treated.
Mm.
We're always told to treat people the way we want to be treated, the golden rule, but that does not work. I, for example, I like honesty and tough love, but that doesn't work for most people. And I recently had a conversation with one of my closest friends in the world, and he told me the truth about how he felt about my ex-husband. And we got into this argument about it because when I was married and I would ask him, what do you think? He would say mostly positive things. He wasn't telling me the truth, but he was treating me the way he wanted to be treated, with kid gloves, instead of treating me with the way I want to be treated. I like people to be blunt and honest with me, even if it hurts. And I told him that. I said, I don't, in the future going forward, if I ask for your opinion, just tell me. Be afraid to hurt my feelings. It's okay. I'll get over it. But I was looking to you for honesty because you're normally so honest with me. I've like, of all my friends. And so I think that's really, really critical, is to treat people the way they want to be treated, not the way you want to be treated. What you want may be very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as healthcare, you have to be an advocate for your health and well-being. If you have a serious disease, you need to get a second opinion and sometimes a third opinion. And if there are no curative options available, you should really consider clinical trials.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, I'm thinking about the relationship that you were talking about with your friend. And one of the things that's so great about relationship is that you can design it for each other, right? So it works for you and it works for him. And, you know, you give and take, with the love aspect kind of being at the center of it. Like, that's the future that you're creating together. This, okay, we're going to figure out, because that, I think love really is when you do appreciate the other person and what they're about. And then it becomes little things that used to irritate the heck out of you. And it's going to go, okay, it's not going to happen. You know, things that like, you just don't worry about anymore.
Yeah.
Cause you don't have to be right.
Oh yeah. You can be married or you can be right. You need to choose. You really do. You really do. And my ex-husband had the case of, I must always be right, you know? So.
And the right will get us not very far.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because I think the thing that you want is the future where there's room for both of you in the space to show up. And sometimes we need to remind the other person, like, no, I want a direct answer when I ask you something. My daughter, the youngest one, will always do that to me. It's almost like, because I'm like trying to be the mom and empower her to come up with her own points of view, and not, you know, and she's going, I don't want, I'm asking you.
Yeah.
You. Like, yeah. And then I remember, oh yeah, she's not going to do everything I say anyway. I can just be honest with her about something. Oh, well, it has been so great to talk with you. And I'm, you know, one of the wonderful things about doing a podcast is that you get to just meet incredible people who are doing very inspiring things. And I thank you for that opportunity to spend time with you. It's just been great.
Oh, thank you so much. You're such a good interviewer.
Thanks. But, and we want to tell our listeners how they can support your efforts, where they can find you. And so let's do that. What can they do to help you?
Yes, you can go to Blue Fairy at BlueFairy.org. So it's just fairy with an E instead of an I, because Adrian liked that spelling. That's where it comes from. And you can also find out why we're called Blue Fairy if you go to the website. Mm-hmm. And you can find me at AndreaWilsonWoods.com. Very easy.
Okay. And we will close it there. And thank you again for coming.
Oh, Yolanda, thank you. It's been my pleasure. Mm-hmm.